Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rere is Fundamental podcast, episode 55. I'm so lucky I'm a star. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. Can't you see? What's up, internet? This is the Rere is Fundamental podcast, episode 55. Record on May the 28th and 29th of 2016, brought to you by Rere.net and the Happy Hour Network. I am your sexy party host, Ray Morali, also known as Rere. And if you've never heard this podcast before and never heard of me, I'm Rere. I'm an online NBA writer, blogger, whatever you want to call it. I have my NBA site called TheNoLookPass.com, and I've been cited everywhere from the LA Times, to Slam Magazine, to ESPN, to Sports Illustrated, to CBS, to NBC. Yeah. I know I'm tooting my own horn, so toot. This podcast has a lot of NBA talk, but really, I talk about whatever I want, whether it's other sports, video games, pop culture, wrestling, or just life in general. I have my friends come on here, who are mostly sports writers slash personalities, and we have a nice little session on here, whether it's 4 or 5 minutes or an hour. I also get nostalgic with my friend EJ Christian as we kick it old school, and I also talk to the Gal Pal Squad as I get a woman's perspective on little things like dating, fashion, or just life in general. Basically, the fundamentals of life. In this episode, my sometimes co-host Adam Jacoby joins me as we talk to ESPN's Adam Reisinger. We talk NBA playoffs. And this is recorded before the Golden State Warriors won a thrilling Game 6 against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But we talked about some scenarios, whether the Warriors lose or the Thunder lose. Also, we talked about mobile games and microtransactions, and that became a longer talk than I thought. But before we go on, let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at Rere.net and on Stitcher, and this podcast is being syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass, and follow the podcast Twitter at RereIsFun. Now, it's time for some girl talk. Hey!
It's Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad.
This is Girl Talk with the Gal Pal Squad. I'm here with Joanne. How's it going?
Hey, Ray Ray. More Girl Talk.
Yes. So, did you ever do speed dating?
I did not. And pretty much my knowledge of it is limited to the 40-year-old virgin. So, you'll have to tell me. Is it like
mine
that?
Mine too. Yeah, mine too. Because, like, yeah. I love the 40-year-old virgin, by the way. Yeah. I love that movie. It reminds me of my cousin. But that's another story for another time.
Yes.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like my friend, who I played basketball with, I didn't know that she was, she did this for a living for a little bit, that she was hosting the speed dating thing. Yeah. So she invites me, and she hooks me up for free, because apparently there's a cost to do this. At the time, it was $35 in 2008, so I assume it's much more expensive now.
But, okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I'm like, I don't really want to spend $35 on anything, period. That's just how I have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially on, like, a date where it's, like, or it's speed dating. So, here the rules are, there are 8 guys and 8 girls, and then we rotate every minute. We just talk to them as, you know, much as possible in a minute. That doesn't seem great, does
Interesting.
It?
Interesting.
Yeah. So the thing was, it's like, so a lot of these girls that I talked to were, I don't want to be mean, but, like, they were not my type, basically.
Okay.
Right? Look, physical-wise, right. But the thing was, it's like a lot of them, how can you know somebody in a minute?
<You know? laughs> It just doesn't really seem like enough time to barely get your name out. Hi, my name is Ray Moraldi, you know.
Yeah.
You look at the clock, 15 seconds have already gone by.
Yeah, so I think the first thing, oh, yeah, so I work for this company, da-da-da-da. Hey, we're done. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the time I got to the sixth girl, we were just like, this is kind of a waste of a time because we're not going to get to know each other in a minute, right? And he's like, yeah, I agree. And then it happened to be that the Lakers game was on, too. So it's like, so, you like the Lakers? Yeah, cool. Okay, awesome. And then we just talked about the Lakers for like 20 seconds because that's all the time we had left at that point.
Yeah.
And then it was like, switch. I'm like, oh, okay, see ya, bye. So it was like that for the last three girls for me. We just talked like, oh, yeah, this is not going to work because there's not enough time for this thing.
So was the entire thing only 8 minutes long? They paid $35 for 8 minutes?
Yeah, like a minute long for each table. That's it. That's all you're going to get. Yeah, you'll get free refreshments, whatever. And then I suppose you could talk to them after. But even so, it's like, you know, a lot of them just like left afterwards because it just doesn't work. But the good thing was after that was that they thought, the last three girls thought I was quote unquote funny or whatever. So I got their numbers and they got mine. So that was the silver lining out of that.
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting that it works better like when you're not really trying and not following, you know, the structure that's set up there.
Yeah, and I didn't get any characters like I did in the 40-year-old version, so, you know. I mean, that would have been great, but, you know, it just turns out, I mean, that's why they are movies and this is real life, and, yeah, it didn't work that way, so. And my friend was like, so how did you like it? I'm like, well, I mean, I did get three numbers, but, you know, the way it was set up, it's like, it just didn't work for me. So, yeah. It's not as exciting as I thought it was going to be, honestly. Maybe with friends.
I mean, was it awkward? It seems like it would be awkward.
A little bit, yeah, but, like, coming into it, it's like, we knew the rules, like, okay, you only have a minute, and the minute goes by really, really fast.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you thought you have something. Oh, net switch. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, so. And about four or five girls didn't feel like they wanted to be there either. It's like, oh, my God. I killed $35 to do this. You know? And I'm sure it's more expensive now because that was 2008. I assume it's like $50 now or whatever. And it's like, I don't know if I want to do this anymore, you know? And besides, it's like, what constitutes dating these days anyway? It's like, when I go out on a date, it's just like a dinner. It's like $15, and you pay for the girl, it's $30. Like, that's much better, and you spend a lot more time than just a minute.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, did you ever think about doing this sort of thing?
No. Yeah, like I said, my knowledge of it is just entirely limited to movies and TV. So.
Yeah, it just didn't work. So, I mean, if you guys think this is cool, then you can go out and try. You might have a better experience, but I didn't. Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't have any stories out of the three girls that I went out again.
Well, so. That's a bummer.
I know. I'm sorry. I know. Everyone has something to have a story where every time I socialize with a woman.
You always have stories with the ladies.
Yeah, I do. It's just awful, you know, from deaf girls in high school to
Luna.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. But I would never do it again if given a chance. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What if it was free again, like you had the opportunity last time?
Yeah, it was free, yeah.
If you didn't have to pay, do you think you would try it again? Like, just like, okay, what the heck?
If I didn't have to pay, then yeah, sure, why not? It's
okay.
Free, right? Yeah, but $50? Like, no.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, $50 is a lot. Like, I don't know. Like, every time I spend money, I always think it's a lot, so. Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe if it's like, 8 girls that I know from Twitter or whatever that I like, then sure.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess in that kind of situation where you already have the basics out of the way, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But
they know who you
are.
They know what you do for a living. They know generally what your interests and hobbies are.
Yeah, But not knowing them and trying to get to know them in a minute, it's just awkward. It's like you might as well just walk down the street and then get to know somebody for like a minute. It's like, oh, hey, so I think you're cute, blah, 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 blah. And then she goes to the bus, bye. It's basically like meeting the In-N-Out girl. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. And I feel like even in that kind of situation, it's almost even hard to tell probably if there is a physical attraction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you can get a first impression, but, you know, I mean, sometimes that kind of thing, sometimes you can't always tell immediately if you're going to be physically attracted to someone, you know?
Yeah, sometimes. Like, but in my experience there, it's like I probably found, like, 3 or 4 of them physically attractive to me, but mm-hmm. the others, not so much. But, you know, I guess to others they would be. But, yeah, it's still hard
yeah.
to judge in a minute. So, like I said, I might as well just go walk down the bus stop, hope there's 8 girls there, and then just talk to them each for a minute, and that might as well be my, you know, that might as well be my...
Gotta go.
Yeah, exactly. Bye. It was nice seeing you.
Conversation over.
Yeah, exactly. And like I mentioned, In-N-Out girl. But that was longer than a minute, so...
Oh, In-N-Out girl.
I missed her. It's been 5.5 years, but I still miss her.
Perfume smelled so pretty.
That's just awful. Yeah, so anyway, that's it. Are you disappointed? I'm sorry.
No, I enjoyed it.
Because I know.
Always hoping for a classic Ray Ray story, but, you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, not this time around. Thanks, Joanne.
Always fun, Ray Ray.
Hey guys, it's Pamela Horton, Miss October 2012 and Playboy's Gamer Next Door, and you are listening to Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast. See you then.
Hello? I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good, I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a hat with a bat, a 6-4 baller. I wish I was like 6'9", so I could get with Leo. She, cause she don't know me, but yo, she's really fine. You know, I see her all the time, everywhere I go, and even in my dreams, I can scheme a way to make her mine. Cause I know she's living fat. Her boyfriend's tall, and he plays ball, so how am I gonna compete with that? Cause when it comes to playing basketball, I'm always last to be picked, and in some cases, never picked at all. So I just lean up on the wall, or sit up in the bleachers with the rest of the girls who came to watch they man ball. Dad, y'all, I never understood black, while the jocks get the fly girls, and me, I get the hood rats. I tell them scat, skittles, the Bible. Got hit with a bottle, was sitting in a hospital for talking that mess. I confess it's a shame when you living in a city that's the size of a box and nobody knows your name. Glad I came to my senses, like quick, got sick to my stomach. Overcome it by thoughts of me and her together, right? So when I asked her out, she said I wasn't a type. I wish I was a little bit taller, I wish I was a...
Ray Ray is Fundamental Podcast, episode 55, recording May 28th, 2016. I'm Ray Morali, joined by my sometimes co-host, Adam Jacoby, the greatest storyteller of all time. What's up?
Not a whole lot, man. It's a beautiful day in Des Moines, Iowa. Mm-hmm. I'm lying. It's actually very rainy and gray. But it's all good. It's all good in the hood.
And you just had a birthday, so happy birthday to
Thank
you,
you.
Dude.
Thank you. I am 17 years old now.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait for you to be legal. That sounds really awful.
Delete. Siri, delete podcast.
Joining us, our good friend from ESPN, the other Adam. Well, that sounds awful, too, because now I'm making him feel second rate. Adam Reisinger, what's up?
What am I, Toronto now? I'm the other.
Yeah. By the way, Toronto, who just lost to... The land, as Adam Reisinger refused to call it for a few months, and then suddenly, he's calling it the land.
Yeah, and see, I started calling it the land, ironically, because I feel like no one calls it that, and now I'm just calling it that, and I feel stupid for doing so.
Yeah, because when I saw you post that picture, and you're like, I'm back at the land, I'm just like, oh, are you serious now?
It's all about getting one for the land.
Yeah. And
that commercial is like... Or are you good with the trophies and, yeah. and titles? I'd be like, yeah,
yes, I'm quite good with those.
I know he's had multiple, like 4 MVPs, 2 rings. Like, mm-hmm. come on,
you're good with that? Yes, very. I'm very good with all those accomplishments I've had in my career.
No, I'm not. I hate those. I don't want them anymore.
You can have them.
Yeah, how dare I win multiple titles? What?
Yeah, so the Cavs beat the Raptors in 6 games, which probably nobody in the world expected, because we all expected either a sweep or a gentleman's sweep. What about you guys?
I feel like it's weird because for a series that went 6, in retrospect, this wasn't a competitive series in any way.
Mm-hmm.
The 4 games the Cavs won, they combined to win by a total of 114 points. Like, that's not close in any way. The Raptors had one game where they dominated from start to finish, and that was sort of the game that, okay, if you thought it was a gentleman's sweep, that was the game. And then what happened is in game 4, Cleveland just didn't try for like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then finally, once they started trying, they had really dug themselves too big of a hole. They did come back and take the lead at some point, but it was one of those things where it was clearly they had to expend so much energy just to get back to that point that they didn't have anything to sustain for the end of the game. But that game felt to me a lot like game 3 of the finals last year, where last year the Cavs won the game and took the lead in the series, but the way that the fourth quarter went in that game, you felt like, okay, the Warriors figured this thing out, put it back together, and they're going to take care of business from here, and they did. And that's exactly what the Cavs did in this series. The fourth quarter in game 4, it's like, okay, they figured out what they need to do. If they just put out that effort from the start of the game for the next 2 games, this is over super fast, and that's exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that kind of a risk, though? What if, like, Biombo elbows LeBron in the head, he gets a concussion or something?
Anytime you screw around like that and stretch a series longer than you need to, that is the risk. And
yeah.
It's weird because you can't say that's what happened to the Cavs last year because, you know, Kevin Love got hurt in game 4 of a sweep and Kyrie got hurt in game 1. So it's not like they stretched things out longer than they needed to. But if any team knows the importance of finishing a series just for the purpose of keeping guys healthy, it's the Cavs. And they clearly lost their focus in Toronto. And who knows if, you know, it was J.R. Smith not sleeping for 3 days and enjoying the Toronto nightlife. Or them just thinking, you know what, we've won 10 straight, we can sleepwalk through the next 2 and we're going to go to the finals. The wake-up call of losing those 2 games was probably, it ended up being a good thing for them because everyone did make it through healthy and they regained their focus and they're back in prime shape heading into the finals.
Yeah, and also, you know, Cleveland is a jump shot first, second, and third offense. And there are just some nights when your shots aren't falling. And there isn't a really solid plan B other than LeBron, please save us. And sometimes he's got that in him, and sometimes he doesn't. But I think LeBron is much more effective putting his team on top big like we saw in game 6. Taking games over early on rather than digging his team out of holes. And that's certainly how he was the most effective all the way through this series. I mean, yeah, I don't think anybody expected this one to get to 6 games. And if anything, Toronto showed that the best way to beat Cleveland is have them shoot about 15% from 3. But you can't expect that to happen 4 games out of 7. I just absolutely not. Not with these guys. And certainly not if J.R. Smith gets to bed at a reasonable hour. And to Earl's credit, he has been a little bit more disciplined over the last couple years, which is nice. He's certainly put together some of that discipline on defense. I believe Tyronn Lue called him the best perimeter defender game in and game out on that team, which would sound insane 2 years ago even. But you watch and it's like, yeah, okay, I can see that. So they've got the pieces in place to give pretty much anybody a series. And that would have gone for San Antonio if they'd even made it to the conference finals. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to see. And, I think anybody expecting the West to romp in this one because they're the West and, oh, Cleveland had such an easy path to the finals. They did. But I think if you expect that to translate into a sweep in the finals, I think you'll be sorely mistaken.
I like that J.R. Smith was carrying the Eastern Conference trophy like the entire time. Like when he received it in the the ceremony, and then during the press conference with Kyrie, LeBron, and Kevin Love, he was still carrying it. Like, whoa, why don't you just carry that everywhere you wherever you go, like in the finals or something, like carry that with you too
onto the court.
Yeah, sure.
I think that could actually confuse defenders because the trophy basically looks like a ball.
It really does.
And so JR will just be out there with the trophy the whole time, and people will be running at him thinking he's about to shoot. And realistically, at some point, he's going to shoot the trophy.
Yes.
Because that's just what JR Smith does.
Yeah. Anything that looks like a shape of a basketball, he will shoot it wherever. So, yeah, so has JR Smith gotten any sleep yet? It is 3:18 Eastern over there at the moment.
No, not a chance.
He's probably not going to sleep until...
The finals don't tip off till Thursday. He doesn't need to go to sleep till, like, Tuesday at the earliest.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Plus, thanks to the Raptors, JR just discovered that there's a casino in Cleveland.
Whoa, that's right. People had a big deal out of that, too.
There's a solid chance that he had no idea about that until this series. Until the stupid controversy with the Raptors players being at the casino at 2 a.m., suddenly JR's like, wait, there's a casino? It's open at 2 in the morning in Cleveland?
Yeah. Yeah. The controversy with him was that he wasn't invited.
Yeah.
There's a casino in the land. Who would have known, right?
There's no way it's not depressing, right?
Oh, it's not like being at, you know, at the MGM Grand in Vegas at like 4 in the morning. Like, it's a sad, like, what it reminds me of is the Simpsons Mr. Burns Casino episode. Mm-hmm. And like, you just depression as soon as you walk in, and like Marge sitting there, you know, at the slot machine, mindlessly pulling the arm over and over. That's the casino in Cleveland.
It's like if Biff Tannen's casino was actually like in real life.
Oh, that's depressing.
Which it's basically going to be Biff Tannen's casino when the RNC shows up next month.
Oh, God. Oh, wait, the RNC is at the casino?
It's in Cleveland. I mean, I think it's at the arena, but the arena is right next door to the casino.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, it was basically, like, if you've ever wondered what Back to the Future 2 would be like in real life, we're going to find out in about a month.
That's going to be awful. So what do the Raptors do from here? People say they overachieve, even though they're the number 2 seed in the East. And they don't know what to do with DeMar DeRozan. People say he's not that great of a player, but he's been their leading scorer the past few years. What to do from here?
I mean, I don't think it's weird because you're right. The Raptors were a 2 seed. They won one fewer game than the Cavs in the regular season. So I don't know if it's fair to say they overachieved by getting to the conference finals.
Yeah.
By the same token, they had never won a 7-game series before, like in their entire franchise history. So to win 2 of them, especially after the Pacers series, where they're basically like half a second away from being eliminated in that series.
Yeah.
If Solomon Hill is half a second quicker on his shot release, who knows what happens in that series. They could have been done in the first round, and they could have been done in the second round. So the fact that they made it all the way to the conference finals and got to 6, it's a big step for them. But yeah, the question is, how can you make the next step with your 2 best players being Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, or do you let DeRozan walk and try and replace him, or possibly replace him with giving Valanciunas a bigger role and bringing someone else in? Or do you just hope that this team gets a little bit better next year and Cleveland gets a little bit worse, which I don't think is something you really want to bank on.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a little asterisk for the Eastern Finals. Like, if Valanciunas is healthy, I still think Cleveland wins it. And Cleveland probably doesn't, put forth 20% effort up in Toronto if they know the Raptors are full strength. But you know, the Raptors weren't full strength. And Valanciunas is really, really good. So they sort of have to figure out what their identity is going to be going forward. Like, is this Lowry's team? I think you can make the case that this is going to be, you know, his squad. And you let DeRozan go. Because it's not that he's bad. DeRozan is clearly not bad. But he's in a system that allows him to take too many shots because he's not terribly efficient. And there's a ceiling, I think, long term in terms of how good your offense can be if you're giving the ball over and over to a guy who is talented but inefficient. I mean, look at the teams that featured Antoine Walker. Look at the teams that featured Rudy Gay. You know, these guys could put the ball in the basket a lot. It just took them a ton of attempts to do it. And that's ultimately, you know, you don't win rings like that. You don't get to the finals like that. That they're going to be getting open shots because, you know, the defense is going to have to help off them to take out, you know, some players who are more reliably going to shoot the ball. If you put them in different situations, they can be effective weapons. You know, once again, look at Rudy Gay, late career. So I think that DeRozan can flourish elsewhere, but he probably should go and do it elsewhere. And then Toronto has to really decide what their offensive identity is going to be going forward.
I like how you mentioned Rudy Gay, who was also a part of the Raptors a few years ago, too. So, but they clearly need some outside shooting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Lowry's probably their best three-point shooter, but he's the one making a place for that team. So he needs to kick the ball to a good three-point shooter, which they don't really have at the moment.
And part of it is they need Lowry to shoot like he did all season, all postseason. You know, and not be terrible at the outside shot for two rounds, and even stretching into the start of the Cavs series. I mean, DeRozan just isn't a three-point shooter, and so
right. You
figure if they decide that they're moving on from DeRozan, you probably want to replace him with a 3-and-D type player. They have a guy like that in Damari Carroll, who was hurt most of the year, and was even playing a little dinged up in the playoffs, but I think you need, you know, the way the NBA is now, you can never have enough of those guys.
Right.
Like, if, you know, the Cavs' best lineup in the Raptors series was surrounding LeBron with four guys who were essentially just three-point shooters. And and they destroyed the Raptors every time that five-man lineup was on the court.
Yeah, they'll need a knockdown shooter. Like, say, what if they get a J.J. Redick or a Kyle Korver or someone like that, you know?
It'd be funny if they got Korver and then had Korver and Carroll, and they're, at that point they would basically be turning into Hawks North.
Well, I mean, it's a system that works in Hawks South, Hawks Normal.
They did go to the East Finals last year.
Yeah, and if you put Carroll in a situation where his role is functionally similar to what it was in Atlanta, where you know what you're going to get out of him, he knows that he can succeed there. Like, I love Carroll. And he was fantastic for Atlanta, and I thought, you know, this is going to be, he is a solid role player on good teams. Like, he's never going to be the problem. But if you expect him to be hoisting 20 shots a game, like, he can't be your focal point, but he can be a really, really good complementary player. So if he's one of, like you said, three long arm perimeter guys who can knock down threes, you know, stretch the area, and you know, he can flourish like that, fantastic. And that's probably going to have to be what they do. Like, you mentioned that a lot of teams, you know, you really can't have enough. I mean, look at how well Golden State, San Antonio has cycled those guys through their roster over the years. You know, your George Hill, your Danny Green. That's probably what they need to do up there too. Just always be able to plug in a 6'8" guy with super long arms who can just stand in the corner and when the ball gets to him, knock it down half the time. It's a pretty successful formula.
The Raptors did get a spur, but they got Corey Joseph instead, who is a good backup point guard, mm-hmm. but, you know, he's not the 3 and D guy that the Raptors need
right.
at the moment. So let's talk about the Western Conference, where the Warriors and Thunder are going to be playing Game 6 tonight, so by the time this podcast comes out, it'll be over. The series may be over, so let's offer some scenarios here. So pretend the Warriors win the series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, wait, what does that do?
Wait, pretend the Warriors win the game or the series?
The series.
Okay.
The series. So, what does that do for the Thunder? Kevin Durant's a free agent. Westbrook's a free agent after next season. So, do they break up the Thunder from here? What's going on? Does Durant leave? Because those coaches are going to come up regardless. He probably won't, but you know.
I feel like Durant cemented his return to OKC when they beat the Spurs. Regardless of what they ended up doing against the Warriors, they proved that they could compete with an elite team with this roster. And I feel like he wants to give it another chance there with that. So them losing to the Warriors, even after taking a 3-1 lead, I don't think pushes him out the door. But I think he leaves the door open a bit, signs that LeBron-type, you know, 1 year with a 1 year option contract. So that way, if Westbrook, who is more likely to leave for reasons other than basketball, if he leaves next summer, that would, at that point, Durant wouldn't be locked into being stuck in OKC with no complimentary star. The other thing is that he might decide that he wants to stay in OKC and build something without Westbrook, even if Westbrook leaves. So we really have no idea what's going to happen, other than I really think at this point Kevin Durant is locked into returning to OKC, regardless of what happens the rest of this postseason.
You know how critics are. Like, you lose a 3-1 series lead. You lose three straight.
Yeah, it's true, but they'd be losing a 3-1 series lead to a team that won 73 games in the regular season. Like, mm-hmm. they hadn't lost two straight all season until the Thunder won games 3 and 4. So I don't right. think it would be that shocking for the Warriors to come back and win this series.
Yeah, especially since two of those three games are going to come at the Oracle.
Yeah.
Where it is fantastically difficult to win a game.
The Thunder beat the Spurs twice in San Antonio, where mm-hmm. the Spurs have lost only once during the regular season. And the Warriors have lost twice at home in the regular season, and Thunder beat them once in the series as well. So, is Billy Donovan better than Scott Brooks? Because it doesn't seem like there's any difference in their coaching, honestly. They're maybe a bit more disciplined defensively, but Brooks did that too for a couple of years.
I think the biggest difference that I've seen between the two is that Billy Donovan is more experimental with his lineups.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Royce Young, our Thunder beat writer, pointed something out that's interesting. He has this way of testing out lineups. What he'll do is he'll switch out one guy in the lineup and see if it works. And if it does, he'll then switch out another guy and see if that works. And if it works better, fine. If it doesn't, he'll go back to the previous configuration. And it landed him on a lineup in the conference finals where he had a five-man group out there that was just killing the Warriors, but that hadn't played together at all in the regular season. And it was that little step-by-step experimentation, whereas Scott Brooks was the kind of guy who was so locked into his lineups and his rotations that, looking back, it might have cost him a title in 2012, because the Heat made that adjustment to go with Battier and the smaller lineup with Bosch mm-hmm. at center. And he never adjusted. It was still, here's Kendrick Perkins taking the opening tip. And Kendrick Perkins had no purpose in that series whatsoever.
Right.
And Donovan has been much quicker to adjust and experiment. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And the thing I've liked from him is that when it doesn't work, he doesn't just mindlessly stick with it and say, well, I decided to try this and so we're going with it and I'm the coach and I know what's right. Like, he's like, okay, well, this lineup clearly doesn't work. Let's try something else.
It's funny how Brooks didn't adjust in the Miami series in 2012 when he did that in San Antonio where he put Tavo Tafaloshe on Tony Parker. So I find it funny that he would do adjustments against the Spurs but not against the Heat. Like, it was pretty inconsistent with his adjustments.
Yeah, because Brooks was the kind of guy where he, like, the cross-matching was never his problem. It was literally, like, changing the guys on the court. Mm-hmm. And he got locked into this is how, you know, we're going to win this way with these guys. And it took him too long to make the move. It was always like, you know, if it was a regular season, it would be like 5 or 6 games too long with a bad lineup. The playoffs would be 1 or 2 games too long. And to be fair, the last couple postseasons he had, he was always hampered by injuries. And so mm-hmm. those were, you know, messing with his adjustments to begin with. So it's hard to judge, like, what should I change up when you've already been forced to change up something because someone's hurt. So, but I think Donovan is weirdly not getting enough credit. Like, there's a lot of this, like, oh, well, you know, if Scott Brooks had a healthy team, they'd be doing just as well. I don't know that that's necessarily true, and I don't know that it's not true, but I think Donovan deserves some credit for being flexible, particularly in this round against the Warriors.
Yeah, you mentioned the injuries, and my original answer to Ray Ray's question was, Donovan deserves a lot of credit for having Durant and Westbrook in their primes and healthy at the same time. And maybe Scott Brooks should have tried that. I think the reason why people are slow to give Donovan credit is because, especially in the first, I mean, gosh, half of the season, maybe even the first two-thirds of the season, the Thunder still had some problems with late-game offensive identity, which was one of the prime problems that everybody had with Brooks, which was, you know, is this guy even, you know, calling plays in late game situations? And the Thunder, you know, they blew fourth quarter lead after fourth quarter lead this season. And so you thought, well, okay, this is just more of the same. You know, this is always going to be their problem. Maybe the problem's even bigger than the coach, but either way, it's something that Donovan isn't fixing. And that was a reasonable conclusion to come to. And so there wasn't a whole lot, for most of the season, there wasn't a whole lot to countervail that notion that, you know, Billy Donovan was just, a suit with a haircut, which was what people sort of thought about Scott Brooks. So I get why Donovan hasn't earned himself a whole lot of praise thus far, or at the very least, hadn't done so in the regular season. The way his team is playing right now through the postseason, though, they deserve a mammoth amount of credit, even if, Donovan deserves a lot of credit, even if the Warriors end up pulling this thing out.
Hey there, this is Serena Winters of LakersNation.com, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
So, I guess what it takes is, it has to be a championship, so that Donovan gets a lot of credit, right?
Yep. Something close to it, yeah, I bet.
Yeah. The Thunder won one game against the Heat in 2012, so. So, what if the Warriors lose? They can lose tonight. They won 73 the regular season, but now, this could be the most disappointing season of all time, probably?
Yeah. You have to think, it's not like the Jordan Bulls, which are the only comparable for the Warriors at this point, unless you want to go all the way back to the 72 Lakers that won 16 games? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. I got that one right. unless you want to go all the way back that far, there's just no other recent comparable than the Jordan Bulls. And those teams, the ones that were putting up giant win numbers, they always went ahead and won the title. You know, it's not like the Knicks took them out ever. So, yeah, it would have to be a disappointment. Otherwise, the word would have no meaning in the sport of basketball. So, there would be, I think the national media, after praising, you know, whoever wins the championship, and that would be a fantastically compelling championship match between the Thunder / Durant and Westbrook versus LeBron / the hapless Cavaliers. I mean, it'll be, if that's the case, it's going to be phenomenal. Once the high wears off from that series, I think the entire offseason is going to be a Warriors autopsy if they can't even make the NBA Finals after a 73-9 regular season.
There will definitely be the hot takes of the biggest choke job of all time. Mm-hmm. We'll see all the crying Jordans. You know, that'll all happen.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of what it's going to come down to, and I don't want to sound like I'm making excuses for them, and I don't think they're going to make excuses, but at some point, rational people, which won't include much of the people reacting to this, but rational people will realize that, hey, maybe Steph's injuries played a bigger part in this than we wanted to admit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he hurt his knee the first time he's had a knee injury in his career. The kind of thing where if it happened in the regular season, he probably would have taken like 3 weeks off. It happened in the postseason, so he took like 3 games off. He hasn't looked as explosive coming back, particularly in the Thunder series, and the Thunder deserve a lot of credit for containing him as well as they have, but he seems to have lacked that sideways explosion that has freed him up just that little bit to get his shot off. We've seen his three-pointer blocked more in this series than we have all season. So,
right.
Like I said, a lot of credit goes to the Thunder. They've done the right things, but I think that he's been banged up, not necessarily more than he's admitting, because, you know, we saw the report the other day, the 70%, like, that seems about right. And I think it's just his game is so predicated on that lateral explosiveness and that ability to create just enough space as quickly as possible to fire up his shot, that any little bit that's throwing him off throws off the entire Warriors game. And the Thunder have been excellent at taking advantage of that on both ends of the court. You know, they're doing what they need to do on offense to take control of games, and they're doing what they need to do on defense to contain him. And so it's not one of those things that it's going to be immediate that people will say, oh, well, it was because Steph was hurt. But I think years from now, if the Warriors don't pull this out, people will look back just like right now the team that has the most wins all time that didn't get to the finals, was the 73 Celtics, and they won 68. And John Havlicek was hobbled by a hamstring injury in the conference finals. And I think that'll be the same thing where years from now, it'll be like, yeah, the Warriors won 73 and they didn't make the finals, but Steph Curry was banged up, had a knee injury that he was trying to play through. And it'll just be part of their legacy with that. That'll be, yeah, they didn't win. Yes, Steph was hurt. Yes, it was a disappointment.
Will you see teams go after the wins record if the Warriors don't make the finals this year?
God,
like,
no. No.
Yeah, right? They're not.
It's going to be at least another 20, 25 years. I mean, think about this. The closest thing that we saw in between the Bulls winning 72 and the Warriors winning 73, we never saw a team even come close to challenging that number. But the closest thing we saw to a team making a run at something in the regular season was a few years ago when the Heat won 27 straight.
Right.
They were serious about going for 33 straight. And I think that even it took a lot out of them, and it ended up not costing them. You know, they won the title, and I don't think that the chase for that hurt them in any way in the postseason. But it's just one of those things where it's too risky to make a run like that. It's really hard to win that many games, whether it's trying to win 33 in a row or trying to win now, you'd have to win 74 to beat the regular season record. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's just not worth the appearance that you're compromising your chance at the title.
One of the other, it wasn't a serious challenge at 70, but you remember just last season, Golden State won 67 games.
Yeah.
And since it wasn't going to be a round number, nobody really was like, oh my God, what are they? You know, they were never on the pace. But a big part of why they were successful in the postseason was because they were able to manage everybody's workload over the course of the regular season. One, because they're already blowing teams out and able to sit their guys in the fourth quarter. But two, they did such a great job, and they were lucky too. But they did a great job of monitoring stress levels in their guys, and you know, using analytics to figure out, you know, who's going to be fatigued, you know, when to take the precautionary rests. And there was no reason for them not to do any of that, because they weren't, it wasn't a situation where, oh, we got to get this guy back on the court because X, or because Y, other than because he's now ready to play. And so that's not the case this year. Because they absolutely took that chase seriously, and it probably put them in a situation where they were not as they didn't have the comparative advantage in terms of fitness coming into the postseason that they did coming into the last one. And so, you know, at some point, winning 73, which is really, really cool, but if it takes away anything from how prepared you are to win in the postseason, you know, it's sort of a fool's journey. So, I think, especially if the Warriors don't pull this out, other teams are going to look at that and say, okay, so why would we ever want to push for 82 games straight? Like, what? That's because it's just not, it doesn't make sense from a workload perspective, from a physiological standpoint. Like, if you play, it used to be, if you played 82 games, you know, oh, you were tough. Oh, you know, you took the game seriously. Oh, you know, this guy, he's a consummate professional. Now it's, oh man, I hope he's still got 20 games left in him in the postseason, because that's rough, dude.
Yeah.
So now that we're understanding how to keep these guys better fit at the exact right time, which is the last, 20-ish games of the year, how to sustain their fitness through that last most grueling part, which LeBron has, you know, usually, when we've seen the Heat lose in the finals, it's because LeBron's doing too much late. And he, if LeBron can't even do it, then nobody can. So now that we're getting our understanding to the point where we know how to make these guys as fit as possible for, you know, the conference finals, the NBA finals, I think that trying to set wins records or to do anything that requires 82 straight games of, you know, going 100%, I think those are incompatible goals at this point.
Or we could all blame Donatas Motiejunas' sweat on the floor.
Yes.
That's what.
Yes.
When Stephen Curry slipped in game 4, I believe, against the Rockets. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, we all know that Adam is rooting for the Land to win the NBA championship. Mm-hmm. Who are you rooting
for? Gotta get one for the Land.
I'm rooting for the Thunder personally, because it would be really, really cool, especially after the last several seasons of, well, now it's time to break up the Thunder. Oh, the dynasty that never was. Send Westbrook anywhere. They'll never win with Westbrook. They'll never win. Durant doesn't have what it takes. He's too nice. All of that, just wash it away. Not only for the Thunder to wash it away, but to do so by going through the 2016 Spurs, the 2016 Warriors, and then the 2016 Cavs. So, in other words, I mean, one, the three best teams they could possibly face other than, you know, themselves. And the, what do you want to say, the five best players in the NBA not on the Thunder between LeBron, Kawhi, Curry, Clay, Draymond, you know, like just the hardest possible route they could take to a championship. I would love it if that's how they did it. And I, no offense to the Land, but I remember the fans burning the jerseys in the streets and Dan Gilbert's stupid little Comic Sans letter. Like, to paraphrase Rick Ryan.
I don't think any of that happened. I'm pretty sure the internet made that all up.
Right. It's the media. Oh, like, LeBron forgives, but I don't. So, I hope LeBron opts out, goes somewhere else, and wins the next five championships. Absolutely. But the hell with you, Cleveland fans. Go Thunder.
I'm just after the years of, you know, the particularly going back to 2011 and the LeBron hot takes and the will he ever win and he's a choker and can't play the fourth quarter. I'm now 100% here for the will Kevin Durant ever win a title hot takes should either the Warriors or the Cavs win it all.
Man.
I mean, at this point we'd be like 10 years into Kevin Durant's career and we're, you know, especially if they lose in the finals, he'd be 0-2 in the finals. Like, we'd really be on the verge of the hot take cannon exploding here.
I mean, I do want to see his 73-9 Warriors win the championship. It'll be,
that'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. Yeah. But I just don't want to see any more Westbrook Durant rumors leaving Oklahoma City. Like, people are so obsessed of breaking up really good teams. You know, I just don't get the obsession. But, yeah, I'm all for the Thunder winning it all. And, yeah, sorry, the Land.
No! We need to give Cleveland one moment of hope before the RNC comes into town and the whole town. Because that town is not surviving this summer.
Yeah, like, that's true. That's true.
It's over. Regardless of what happens in the finals. Now, if they win the finals, it's possible that the town's explosion is accelerated and the RNC actually doesn't have a town to go to.
Yeah, well, I just feel like this could be the Thunder's last chance and the Cavs can still go do it again next year or 2 years from now. Assuming, you know, LeBron is, he's not going to leave though. I don't think LeBron's leaving anyway, so.
No,
don't you remember he unfollowed the team and something God. Social media and
right, yeah, all of those are news stories nowadays. You know what we should do? We should make up some rumors and see if they'll take that as, you know, hey, Adam Reisinger from ESPN said LeBron is leaving next year or whatever.
I saw it on Richard Jefferson's Snapchat.
Hey guys, LeBron drives a Kia apparently or whatever. I mean, those are all news stories nowadays. It's ridiculous, right?
It's crazy.
It's people wanting anything to talk about with LeBron. So, well, I mean, it comes with the territory.
Yeah.
He commands attention in a way that no other athlete in America does. What he does on Twitter, like who he follows and unfollows, would ever be like a story. But it's sort of the same way that, you know, Monica Lewinsky got famous for a consensual private act with somebody. Like, that was her fame. So right. You know, it's,
that is true.
Once you reach a certain level of public notoriety is not the right word, but just being in the public eye, literally anything about you can make somebody like famous, or literally anything you do can be turned into a story. So that's where LeBron is. He's the Bill Clinton of the NBA, I guess, is where I was going with that one. Whatever.
What do you want to say to people that want to discredit LeBron James going to 6-3 NBA Finals? And for that matter, James Jones going to 6-3 NBA Finals.
Well, it's they might want to, but the first in 50 years. I mean, come on. Come on.
Like, literally, all we need to do to discredit the people who are discrediting this achievement is rattle off all the people who never did this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, name any basketball player in the last 50 years, they never did this.
They always like to say that, but the Eastern Conference is easy. Well, what do you want to say about the Boston Celtics in the 60s? Yeah, like,
the Western when they Conference could win was easy in the 80s. The Western Conference, like, the Lakers went to the finals 9 out of 11 years, but still never did it 6 straight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the teams that back in the 50s and 60s, the Celtics that kept going to the finals, it's because they had to win one series to do it. Like, yeah. The same way that John Wooden's Bruins, the way they kept winning titles was they didn't have to win 6 games to do it. Like, it is so much harder because you have so many more games to win. Like, if it were a case where you had 2 or 4 teams from each conference into the playoffs, I mean, yeah, you'd have more compelling matchups in the first round, what we would call the first round at that point. But you would see more teams getting, you know, sustaining streaks because it's easier. You know, the Spurs wouldn't have been beaten by the Grizzlies that one year, that they were the number one seed. The Mavericks wouldn't have been taken out by the Warriors. You know, all of these potential roadblocks, Kevin Love's shoulder would have still been in one piece by the time the Cavs hit the semis last year. You know, it's insane to me that people don't understand how effing hard this is for these guys.
Yeah, they're going to a bunch of what-if scenarios. What if LeBron was in the West? Well, shoot, what if Magic stayed 25 years old forever? Would the Lakers have gone to 32 straight NBA Finals? Like, seriously.
What's up, y'all? This is Sharif, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Somewhat Fundamental podcast.
This is a story about a girl named Lucky. Early morning, she wakes up, knock, knock, knock on the door. It's time for makeup, perfect smile, it's who we're all waiting for. There you go.
I also invited Adam Reiser. You're here for a reason. Jacoby doesn't know anything about this just yet, but
oh, he will.
He will now. So, Adam Reiser tweeted me and friend of the podcast, Kristen Ludlow, about a Britney Spears mobile game that I had no idea that it was actually existing.
A Britney Spears mobile game?
Yes.
Go on.
And it is the greatest game of all time already. So what you have to do, it's called Britney Spears American Dream. And
okay.
Yeah, and you're basically a struggling pop star that has to make it through the ranks and be on Britney's level, I suppose. So yeah. It's
go on.
Pretty funny.
Go on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the game starts, first of all, it's one of these games where you press little dots on the screen to expend energy and collect stars or whatever, and you achieve goals, and then you come back 2 hours later when your energy is full again, and you do another thing, and they're mindless games, and yet I'm addicted to them because they take like 5 seconds to actually play, and then you put it away for a couple hours, and then a couple hours later when you're bored again, you pull it out and play again for like 5 seconds. But it starts off with you performing on like this stage with Britney Spears, and then the whole game takes place in flashback, which shows some dedication to storytelling that some of these other games like this haven't really done. Like there's a narrative involved here that they have to stick to. Basically, yeah. They've written themselves into a corner like the writers of Lost, and now we're hooked in figuring out how we get out of this.
They start off at a coffee shop called Starbeans.
Yes, not Starbucks, Starbeans.
Starbeans, oh, okay.
Yeah, and Britney Spears happened to be at Starbeans for some reason.
Naturally.
Yes.
And then for some reason, when your character goes up and talks to her, other than her immediately summoning her security and ushering you out of the planet, she's like, oh, you're my new best friend, and I'm going to help your singing career.
Totally. That's the way it works.
Strawberry Frappuccino for Brantley? How come they can never get my name right? I don't get it. You're Britney Spears. Yeah, so you go through all... Yeah, you meet her at Starbeans, and then she suddenly recommends you to a talent agent, and then you're at a party all of a sudden in Hollywood talking to said talent agent, and then she's like cooking you up with these... other contacts, like, you know, musicians and music video directors, and then you have a rival artist. Her name is Aston Cole, I believe.
Right? Yes. Here?
Yeah. And she's out there smearing your name, like, such as, like, oh, he doesn't really know how to sing. He uses computer technology to enhance his voice or whatever. And you have to dispel those rumors and stuff like that. There's an actual storyline going on here.
So you are, you're put into the pipeline, the talent pipeline, very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Very much so, yeah.
Wow, okay. So this is not really an American dream of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps,
nope.
Working hard and getting recognized. No. You ran into Britney Spears at Starbeans, and now you're on your way.
That's how it goes. But that is the American dream. Watch, I run to Paris and I'll become a big star.
My favorite thing is that this the Aston Cole character is so clearly based on Christina Aguilera.
It really was. Yeah.
I was sort of hoping that. I was like, when you're like, the other person's name is, and I was really hoping that you would say, like, Christina Aguilera.
No, they made the name very different, but the look is very, very Christina, and it's just so perfect.
Is it now? Which Christina are we talking about? Young Christina, Genie in a Bottle, or ex-Tina, or the voice?
It's sort of an amalgam of all of them.
Wow!
Like the hairstyle is much more a modern Christina.
Mm-hmm.
The makeup and clothes are very much a Genie in the Bottle Christina, but she's also got like the piercings that suggest a dirty Christina.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much, but I mean it's one of those things where like for people like me and Ray Ray here who have been immersed in this world for God almost 20 years now, we're so old. It's so immediately obvious that this is supposed to be Christina Aguilera.
Yeah. We just want to live the American dream of Britney Spears,
yes.
That's all.
One of my favorite little things about the game is because they obviously can't use real names for things like Starbucks has to be Starbeans. The Staples Center is in there, but it's called the Paperclip Center. And, like, it just kills me imagining Kobe Bryant dropping 60 at the Paperclip Center.
Maybe we get to meet Kobe Bryant, but his name will be Toby Bryan. Yeah. So, yeah, you should probably play this game, Jacoby.
Yeah, that sounds right up my alley.
It's not even really much of a game. You just push yeah. push and get the icons and wait for a couple hours and
like,
go
in
again.
In all seriousness, the industry that has been built up over this mobile game industry where you play for like really like 2 minutes and then put the game away for like 3 hours and then come back again and play for 2 minutes. This industry has become this multi-billion dollar monolith of mm-hmm. all these games that are essentially the same but skinned differently. Because, and it's sad that I know this, but the Britney Spears game is basically just a version of the Kim Kardashian game. It's made by the same company. It has the same mechanics. And they just put out these games that all work this same way, where you go in, you click on the screen for a couple of minutes, and it says your energy's empty. And if you want, you can pay real money to get more energy, or you can just wait. And there are people who are addicted to it and pay real money and are paying literally thousands of dollars a year to these games. And then there are people like me who just use it as like a 5-minute break from the real world every few hours.
Or I can watch videos so I can get more.
Yes, you can watch ads.
Yeah. So that I can continue playing the game.
We've tried to eliminate ads from like, from the internet, from TV, from every walk of life, and then we willingly watch them in these games to get, like, two little energy stars so that we can press that button again.
Yeah, just for 5 more minutes, you
We're
know.
We're the dumbest society on the planet.
We totally are, but I love it.
There must be, like, research psychologists who see this dynamic at work and, like, they're just like, oh my god, it's perfect. We really are rats on the inside, aren't we?
That's what it is. We figured out what little button we have to press to get to the wheel of cheese, and that's what we do. They've literally created an entire industry of us pressing buttons to get cheese.
So
I'm just pissed that I didn't think of this.
Right.
I feel like 5 years ago when these games didn't exist, I could have come up with this.
I know. Like, we've had scenarios where it's like, oh yeah, we were co-headlining a concert with Britney Spears. Here's how it happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We could have thought about this like 10 years ago. 15 years ago, even.
I remember about 10 years ago, people were saying, you know, well, how are we going to make online games profitable? How do we, you know, because it was the point where you could, like, download games, like, for free over Kazaa or what have you.
Yeah.
Shouts out to Kazaa and all your spyware. But everyone was like, well, how do we turn a profit off of this? And so the thought was, oh, microtransfers, you know, micropayments. And the consensus was, oh, that'll never work. That, oh no, you're a fool. Nope. Wrong.
It's so crazy.
Are all rats.
The whole concept of microtransactions seems like this enormous scam. And why it seems like that is because they were introduced with games that you had already paid $60 for.
Right.
And you're like, well, wait, I paid for the game. Why are you making me pay for more stuff? But when attached to these games that you download for free, suddenly you're like, well, I got the game for free, and I normally pay $60 for games, so I've basically got $60 to blow on this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that mindset, like, wait, no. If I literally just wait more time, everything will come to me for free. I don't need to pay money for this stuff. But we're a society that wants everything instantly. Like, I want the NBA Finals to be starting now and not in 4 days. And if
right.
I could hit a little microtransaction button on my phone to make that happen, I would totally do it.
Exactly. I want to find out how I get to co-headline a concert of Britney Spears.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to pay $100. Well, I really won't, but still, $100 just to get to that point.
Who's to say that in one possibly less than sober evening, in a compromised state, that you don't pay, you know, $30 of your way there? Who's to say it won't happen?
Right. Yeah, it's like, suddenly, how did I get to this part of the game?
I'm fully ready. I've spent money on games like this. Like, there, mm-hmm. you know, particularly, Marvel has a bunch of games like this. You know, they're like 7 different Marvel games that you can be playing that have this microtransaction system. And what you realize is you've paid $10 for computer code. It's not like if I'm playing like Disney Infinity and I want a character and there's an actual little action figure that comes with it. Like, nope, it's just something that's on my phone, and if I lose my phone, it's probably gone forever.
Right. Yeah. And it goes for console gaming too. It's like I've paid money just to unlock a couple of cars in the game. Like, I've done that. I paid like $5 and another $5 and another $3 and another $7, and suddenly before I knew it, I spent $35 on that game. When I've already spent like $60 on that game.
There was a year a few years ago. I haven't played Madden in a couple of years, but we're probably talking like 5 years ago now or so. But you had to pay microtransactions to unlock alternate jerseys, and I definitely did that for at least one or two teams. I was like, man, I really want their throwback jersey. Then I would play like one game with that team, and I'm like, wait, I barely even play with this team. Why did I buy this? This is stupid.
Yeah, so we come to the conclusion that we are rats.
We are rats.
So,
that's what it is.
So after this podcast, this rat is going to play more of the Britney Spears American Dream game. So I want to wrap this podcast up now. Go ahead and plug your stuff. Reisinger, go ahead.
All right, well, you can follow me on Twitter at Adam Reisinger. I will be tweeting all sorts of stuff at the finals and probably somehow pissing off Justin Bieber fans again, because that's always fun.
Mm-hmm. Will you be playing the Britney Spears game while you're at the finals?
Oh God, yes.
Ah, see,
well,
man.
What I'm going to try and do is get players hooked on it, and so there will be a point when J.R. Smith misses a finals game because he's too busy playing Britney Spears' American Dream.
That'll be the greatest thing ever.
Has to happen. Has to happen now.
Has to happen now. Adam Jacoby.
You can find my stuff on Twitter if I'm ever like actually on the computer. Sporadic at best. Twitter at Adam_Jacoby. As always, the underscore is very important. Shouts out to the forensic teacher in Wisconsin without the underscore who hates me now. but yeah, that's just about all the stuff I've got to plug. There's also Black Heart Gold Pants where I haven't posted in about 2 months. shouts out to those boys for holding it down. We do have some news coming up there soon. I'll be announcing that soon. But it's still existent, even if they're not getting much from me. And if I could, plug a little bit of life philosophy while I've got everybody's ear here. Mm-hmm. There's no need to be bugging when it's a Ninja Turtle you're hugging.
We're out of here, guys.
Game over, yeah!
Hashtag blame Ray Ray.
Molded.